All rise.
Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot-button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Today, we're going to be talking about the 2014 elections. Mike is with O'Neill and Associates. They are a public opinion firm based in Phoenix. And so, Mike, we talked before the election. Was this last night what you thought it would be?
It was mildly more Republican. I looked at the deviation from between the polling data and the actual results. And it's interesting, if you have conspiracy theory, inclinations, and you only looked at this year, the electorate was 4% more Republican than the average of all the polls suggested. And this, of course, could be flashed around Fox News and show that the polling industry is a conspiracy against the Republicans. However, the last three times there was a bias of that magnitude, it was a bias against the Democrats. So there essentially is a bunch of random variation. The polls are not dead on every single time. On the average, they're dead on, but in individual elections, it fluctuates a little bit. And this case was about as pro-democratic a bias. In other words, the actual results are about 4% more Republican than expected, and as a result of that, all the races but one that we thought were toss-ups ended up being won by the Republicans.
I mean, I got to admit, I was surprised. I mean, races like Georgia, North Carolina, a whole bunch of other races just really turned out to be one-sided.
They did. But now, there is a pattern here. And but first of all, let's acknowledge this was a big Republican year, okay?
Yes.
They picked up in the House. They picked up surprisingly in gubernatorial races, though gubernatorial races are typically not very strongly associated with subsequent results. For example, Massachusetts for many years has had a strong penchant to elect Republicans to be governor. The reason I am convinced being, first of all, the people who they elected as governor are very, very moderate to liberal governors. A case in point, Mitt Romney was a very, very liberal to moderate governor of Massachusetts. By the way, bore no resemblance whatsoever to the fellow by the name of Mitt Romney who described himself as an extreme conservative when he ran for president.
Yes,
Those two guys are not living on the same planet. But factoid here. Did you notice how many red states, or rather, how many blue states the Republicans won last night?
It was amazing. I mean, in terms of the governorship,
They carried Maine. Susan Collins, the most liberal Republican in the United States Senate, the Republican most likely to vote for Democrats, was elected as a Republican in a blue state. Even in this Republican big victory last night, they did not win a single other blue state. They however won back all of the red states that they had lost before in the 2000, and this is the class of 2008, and they won three out of five toss-up states. And by the way, I'm giving them Louisiana, I'm giving them Alaska that are still in question. But essentially, they split the purple states. They won the red states. They only won a single blue state. And essentially, it was a very favorable terrain. It was the class of 2008, a year in which the Democrats won all sorts of Senate races that they had no business winning in a normal year. This was more a reversion to a normal election, at least in the Senate.
Although, I mean, I was reading some of the analysis in terms of, you know, the electoral map, and so the next 2 years favors the Democrats, both in terms of the seats that will be up in the Senate and the fact that it will be an election year turnout, which is, you know, yep. We have this talk about that Ron Brownstein talked about a boom and bust coalition. And that, yep. And so the Democrats will have the boom coalition behind them and a favorable map in 2016. And then it goes back to the flip side in 2018. You have a favorable map for Republicans and the year in a midterm turnout, which favors the Republicans. And so are we just going to zigzag back and forth the next 4 years?
I think that's the likely result. I would add to that one other thing, which is if you look at the presidential map, there's still 238 electoral votes locked up for the Democrats. And absent something really big, it is going to be very, very difficult for the Republicans to carry the presidency. All those, essentially, Republicans are older, they're whiter, they're richer, they're all the folks who vote every time in every election, and the Democrats they come and they go. They come in presidential elections, and for the most part, they fade back in off-year elections. Interestingly, the analysis I've seen thus far suggests that among minority voters, the blacks came out and voted this time, but the Hispanics did not.
Why do you suppose that is? Was that a failure of the GOTV effort, or were blacks just turning out higher because of the voter suppression efforts?
I think voter suppression is one possible theory. I think it's also the one group. The Republicans turned this as a referendum attacking Barack Obama, and I think that the black voters were the one group for whom that ended up being a motivating factor to come out and to vote, in effect, for him. So the anomaly was that black voters did come out. The more normal situation is that Hispanic voters did not. And minority voters, in particular, younger voters and lower income voters, are the ones who are very much the surge and decline. They come out in presidential years and they don't come out other than that. And that's based on the limited information that's come out so far, that appears to be what happened this time. Very, very few voters switch their votes from one election to the next. Where there is a huge difference, however, is in the constituency that votes. And basically, you had a whole lot of Democrats staying home, and that gave you the result that you got this time.
So, I mean, it's an interesting thought, because Democrats somehow thought that they found the magic juice in 2012, that they had discovered, they had digitized, you know, get out the vote efforts, and now that they had identified who the voters were, they were going to bring them to the polls every time, and we were now in this, you know, ascendant Democratic era.
I think digitization allowed the get out the vote efforts to reach voters, but you still have to convince them to do it, and you can't digitize that because that's human behavior.
And although,
well, and let me add to that,
with
by the way,
marketers, they would argue even that can be digitized. But now, one thing that it strikes me, and I've often argued, is that I do not understand why and I'm glad that we at least have done it for the presidential election. We have formalized debates. You know, basically, every year since the first Carter-Ford debates, we have had an institutionalized and actually a formal committee now that runs that process. And so it is guaranteed, although each candidate has to agree and there's usually some negotiation, that will happen in the presidential debate. I mean, I guarantee you, Hillary or whoever will be, debating against, whoever is on the Republican side. The issues are no less important. on the off years. I mean, why isn't there any effort, and especially if you're Obama and you feel that you're losing this election, why not nationalize it? Why not have debates? That's something that I just never understood.
You mean debates at the national level or debates at the state level?
If I saw what was going on, one overriding national debate so everyone can watch, because if I'm Obama and I'm seeing this map I'm facing being very hostile and seeing the numbers not looking so hot, I would challenge Mitch McConnell or challenge Boehner. Say, okay.
I'm not so sure that Obama is the one, because frankly, they made points. Because we had a president with approval ratings in the lower 40s, and to the extent that the Republicans made Obama the issue, they won. I think, frankly, not so much Obama himself. Where I think the Democrats really blew it was in not so much in a failure to embrace Obama himself, but his policies. For example, they did not respond at so many levels. We've had 63 straight months of economic expansion. Is that bad? We've had the longest period of private sector job creation in American history. Economy bad. Unemployment was 10.1%. It's now 5.9. Stock market is at new records. The budget has shrunk by two-thirds since 2000. All this stuff. But I didn't hear Democrats saying that. So Republicans said economy bad. The Democrats did not respond to that. And for that matter, Obamacare. They ran against Obamacare, and they have turned it into a dirty word. What the Democrat response should have been is, now what part of Obamacare don't you like? Do you not like the fact that you can now keep your kid on your policy till you're 26? Do you not like the fact that if you have pre-existing conditions, you can now get health care? Do you not like the fact that 40,000 Americans per year died because of lack of health care, according to a Harvard School of Public Health study? What part of Obamacare do you not like? And the answer was just one thing: mandate.
Right.
Public didn't like the mandate. They like every other aspect of Obamacare, but they don't. But the Republicans were able to turn that into a dirty word. But I fault not the Republicans, because they were making their case. The Democrats completely wimped out by not responding to it and not owning it.
Right.
The Democrats failed to own what they did, and therefore when the Republicans said Obamacare bad, economy bad, the Democrats just sort of ran away and hid as opposed to making their case. And that's, I think, a problem that they've had consistently.
Consistently, yes.
Basically, to take something like the healthcare thing, own it. Because you know what? You're going to have to own it anyway. You're going to have to own the mandate. You're going to have to own the few negative parts that there are. But polling consistently showed that about 90% of what the ACA did, the public supports. Yet the Republicans, through consistent messaging, were able to turn it into a dirty word.
And remember,
Obamacare was in existence in 2012 when the president was able to win a near landslide,
although they still
kept at it.
Paul Ryan's talking points were, well, we're seeing what happened. Obamacare hadn't been implemented. Now it has, and the people have spoken. I mean, that's the talking point. But what struck me, a key moment in the campaign, I thought, was Grimes in Kentucky, when she refused to say whether she even voted for Obama. I mean, you're a Democrat.
It just wasn't credible. She was trying to not to be associated with a president who is mildly unpopular, and it wasn't credible.
It just looks ridiculous. Well, if you didn't vote for him, then why do you?
Of course she voted for Obama. And so if that which is obvious, own it. Because nobody's going to believe.
I bet you her campaign tailspin started then, if it didn't start sooner.
The consistent theme on all of that is she looks wimpy. Everybody knew she voted for Obama. Say so. Of course I voted for him.
There's a great...
Now, I don't agree with every single thing that he's done, and let me tell you where I disagree with him.
Bingo. There's a great book, The Natural, Joel Klein did on the Clinton years, and he has a great quote. He won't say who in the Bush family said it, but one of the senior members of the Bush family, which probably means Papa Bush, but it could have been Jeb, said, in watching the 2000 race between Gore and, then Governor Bush, they didn't understand why Gore at some point didn't say, excuse me, Governor, but what exactly is your problem with peace and prosperity? What part of it don't you like? And, and that's exactly your point here. What is it about, giving access to health care you don't like? What is it about a recovering economy you don't like? So,
Yep, and again, you could have done that with Obamacare as well.
Yes.
Long list of things that are a component of that program that people like. And a couple of things they don't, the main one just being mandate. We don't like mandate. In effect, at a national level, this country does have a problem of we want a free lunch. We want everything that the ACA has. We don't want the mandate, which was the one thing that paid for it.
But we don't have free lunches here because we have to take a break for our sponsors. But we'll be right back. More on our special Cyber Law and Business Report, post-election report with Mike O'Neill right after these messages.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Whether you are an online business or domain name investor, you need access to the best names. With over 270 million domains already registered, finding the right names at the best price requires a great wingman. NameJet.com puts you in the pilot seat by giving you fast and unparalleled access to some of the best premium and expired domain names on earth. As the number one domain name auction platform, NameJet.com is the best place to find domains for your business or investment. So light the afterburners to the domain name aftermarket and fly over to NameJet.com at Mach speed to get great domains today. NameJet.com.
Oh yeah, my day is done. Time for happy hour.
You're already done for the day?
Yeah, because I use CertifiedKnowledge.org. Their PPC tools literally save me hours every day.
How do you keep on top of all of Google's new features?
Easy. With Certified Knowledge, their interactive learning modules keep me up to date. And if there's something I don't know, I can watch their video lessons without having to hunt around the Google help files.
Great. I'm ready to expand my knowledge.
Hi, I'm Brett Geddes. I'm the only leader officially supported by Google to teach the advanced track of the AdWords Seminars for Success. I personally recommend CertifiedKnowledge.org as your one-stop shop for all your PPC needs.
Learn, optimize, connect. Be smart. Go to CertifiedKnowledge.org now.
When you started your business, you first listened to your professors. Now that your business is growing and gaining ground, you only seek out professionals. PPC Professionals, an industry leader for highly optimized search marketing campaigns with over 30 years of combined management experience. Our professional approach to every campaign helps you find every avenue of revenue so that you can not only stay ahead of your competitors, but get a return on your investment and increase your bottom line. PPC Professionals, personal, professional, PPC services. PPCprofessionals.com.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back with our special edition, a postmortem of the Republican landslide last night in 2014. And so, Mike, obviously, the news media will take a whole 30 seconds to report the results from last night before they jump into 2016. We actually waited 20 minutes. So what is your thought now? I hear that Hillary's a winner from last night because basically anyone who could have emerged as a potential challenger lost. I'm hearing a lot of winners from last night on the Republican side. Obviously, Walker in Wisconsin, Kasich in Ohio, Christie in New Jersey, and Rand Paul in space. So what are your thoughts?
Well, let me start with the easy stuff. 2016, let's look at the House of Representatives, okay? That is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the Republicans until at least 2022, until after the next census.
Is that because of redistricting? Basically, Democrats
absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. You know, the Republicans won last night, and they're gaining seats. But 2 years ago, the Democrats won a majority of votes cast for the House of Representatives. They still lost the House. They're not getting any higher than that. The Democrats have almost zero prospects for regaining the House until the next redistricting. The second most easy thing to project is the Senate. The landscape 2 years from now is way more favorable. If you give the Republicans the red states, the Democrats the blue states, and then look at the purple states.
Why don't we try to bring Mike back in and take a...
I hear you. You don't hear me.
I'm not hearing you. Are you a headset or can you get...
No, I'm on a landline and I hear you just fine.
Okay, I hear you fine now. Just rub your stomach and tap your head. Maybe that'll help.
Okay, we'll see how that works with high technology. I think where I was at the Senate.
Yes,
the landscape is massively better for the Democrats. What my arithmetic says, if we get the same election we got this time, there's no doubt in my mind that the Democrats gain back seat. It's probably touch and go whether it gives them a majority. But the Senate's in play. The House is Republican. But if you look at the Democratic wall of 238 electoral votes, you've got to give an edge to the Democrats in the presidential race. Almost most certain thing that we end up with for the next 4 years is divided government.
So does that mean, is that an argument for Chris Christie, Chris, Mr. Sit down and shut up, Christie, because he can say, hey, I've won in blue states. I'm from the Northeast. I can cut in the Democratic base.
Well, there's two kind of Republicans. There's the kind who wants to win. That argument appeals to them. Then there is the Tea Party element, and they want to be right. They want to be far right, and they're more oblivious. They actually are convinced. Their mantra goes like this. We put in a McCain. We put in a Romney. They were half-baked semi-Republicans. We need a real Republican in order to win, and that is not the real Ronald Reagan, but their conjured-up image of what Ronald Reagan was, and they are convinced that they need a real conservative in order to win. I think they're wrong, but they really believe that, and there's a fight for the soul of the Republican Party between those two groups.
And so who has the edge for that battle? Is it Scott Walker? Is it Kasich? Is it Rand Paul? Can either of them? Paul seems to be the guy who seems to get the most talk.
Rand Paul is a very, very, he's the most interesting guy to listen to because he's got a lot of elements of his father. He's not as libertarian, hands-off in the foreign policy aspect. He's more inclined to military adventurism than his father was. A genuine libertarian is kind of an interesting guy. I saw him making comments the other day about, hey, the Republicans have made a mistake in terms of voter suppression. We shouldn't do that. I said, wow, I didn't hear any other Republicans say
right.
that.
No, that's...
So his style has some very... But it's going to also be very discomforting. The libertarian strain is not going to go over very well with social conservatives because he doesn't care a whole lot what goes on in your bedroom.
Right.
And there's a whole lot of Republicans who do.
And plus, he's a doctor, so, I mean, he doesn't come from that perspective.
Yep.
And so who would be who's the social conservative sweetheart then? I mean, Scott Walker or Huckabee?
Yeah. Well, Huckabee, certainly Santorum is still kicking around. There's a lot of folks who go that way, and they'll be fighting. First of all, somebody will fight, and, that social conservative group that'll get you second place at least in the Republican primary. It'll get you to the finals. It may not win. I think the economic guys probably still run the place, but somebody is going to try to, you know, at least satisfy the social conservatives, as for example George W. Bush did. He was good enough for them and very good for the economic conservatives, and he looked like he was going to win. So
you use the four letter word, so let's stick with it. What about Jeb?
About what, Jeb?
You used the four-letter word, Bush. Jeb? So what about Jeb?
Oh, the Bush word. Yeah, I was trying to remember which four-letter word I used there. Bush is a very interesting guy. I think to a lot of people, he's the brighter of the brothers. He has a Hispanic wife. He has more verbal ability than his brother. You know, he sounds to most people's ears a lot more like his father than his brother.
Right.
I think he's a very attractive Republican candidate. I think there are, of course, people who would go nuts over the prospect of another Bush-Clinton election. Do we need that as a country? We have this notion that we shouldn't have hereditary politics. He's certainly in the mix. There are people who are going to out-Tea Party him for sure. On the social conservative side, there are people who are going further there. The Republican issue is, here's 12 or 15 names you could throw out, and none of them is the least bit inevitable. The best thing that George W. Bush had going for him was the perception of inevitability, and no one has that at this point.
And he lined up everyone early to make that happen. Now, in terms of 2016 predictions, I'm very dismissive of them. And as I was in 2012 and in 2008, just because of my experience, I got involved with Clinton in 1991, and no one saw us, no one gave us a chance. I mean, a thousand different times we were cut out dead. Everyone was saying it was going to be Cuomo, it was going to be someone else. And then, on November, whatever it was, we were standing tall and we won. So, it is a long, strange, twisted road, and you never know who's going to emerge at the right time. And which actually gives us a good transition. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to have Dr. Laura Brown joining us. And Laura Brown is with George Washington University's Center on Political Management. And but Laura and I actually worked together on the Clinton 96 campaign. So there's a little segue there, but we're going to take a short break. We come back, we'll add Wonk to Mike, and we'll get a full view of what's coming, what happened, and what's going to happen next in this special election, the post-election edition of Cyber Law and Business Report.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan to talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart, or you've read their SEO code of ethics, so you know they're SEO experts. But did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
Looking for a better way to get more traffic and interaction to your Facebook page? Imagine Facebook interactivity on your page like you've never seen. Introducing your new Facebook marketing fix, ZoSocial, the new and revolutionary way to easily manage and automate your Facebook contests and sweepstakes. Create a fun, easy-to-win contest by writing a simple Facebook post. Watch your post go more viral and generate loads of interaction. Track your traffic and generate email lists with ease. ZoSocial is mobile-friendly and complies with Facebook terms of service. Let ZoSocial give your Facebook page some flash today. Zoom over to ZoSocial.com.
InternetMarketingNinjas.com is the online dojo of the highly trained and skilled Internet Marketing Ninjas. Disavow documents, reconsideration requests, Panda and Penguin penalties. Let our superior SEO ninjas confront all of your link-related issues. The Internet Marketing Ninjas are equipped to master any marketing exercise, content creation, authorship, link building, PPC, and more. plus build more buzz for your brand with our social media marketing strategy. Discover all that the Internet Marketing Ninjas can do for you. Visit the online dojo now at internetmarketingninjas.com.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Catherine Drew. U.S. President Barack Obama has invited leaders of Congress to the White House for talks later this week after the Republicans made sweeping gains in America's midterm elections. From January, they will control both houses of Congress after seizing control of the U.S. Senate by capitalizing on widespread voter disappointment in the president. FSN's Washington correspondent Simon Marks reports.
It's the morning after the night before in American politics, and for Barack Obama.
There are over 70 million active podcast listeners in the U.S.
WebmasterRadio.fm reaches them all
with the largest global distribution of any online business-to-business podcast network. Through iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher, and the WebmasterRadio.fm mobile app, we can target and place your message in front of those active listeners immediately. Now, your message can be delivered with less commitment and investment on over 20 hours of weekly original content hosted by the most respected names in digital marketing, thanks to an exclusive private offer available for a very limited number of companies. But you must act fast. Email sales@webmasterradio.fm today and get your message delivered now.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back. This is Bennett Kelly. You're listening to the Cyber Law and Business Report. And just before the break, we talked about 2016 and the unpredictability of presidential races. And Mike, you had a comment on that.
Yeah, I did. It's just an opportunity, I think, to give appropriate homage to the great political philosopher of our time, Yogi Berra. It is difficult to predict, especially the future.
And with that comment, you know, I mentioned before the break that we'll bring on Dr. Laura Brown. She's with the George Washington University School of Political Management. Laura, are you with us?
I am.
And Laura is a, we go way back, farther back than we care to admit. But Laura, what did you make of last night?
Well, I think that what you see is that the country is really tired of Washington. I mean, a lot of anti-incumbent sentiment was present in the electorate. But there's no doubt that this was a president's sixth year midterm. And that is always a difficult one for presidents. And in this case, Obama's approval rating was not in a good place, and many of his fellow partisans lost.
So how much of the blame goes to President Obama?
I think a lot goes to the Democrats' overall strategy. And what I mean by that...
I'm sorry, there was a strategy?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think what I mean by that is that Majority Leader Harry Reid really needed to schedule more opportunities for those vulnerable Democrats in southern states to be able to vote against the president. He did not do that. They were looking to protect Obama from having to take vetoes should things actually pass Congress. And there was just essentially an entire mindset that a lot of what worked in 2012 would work again. But it's really a statement of running the last war and thinking about it, about politics in the past, not really about where they are now.
And so what is your perception for looking forward for 2016? Do Democrats need to regroup, or is this, you know, while everyone's talking about Ron Brownstein's boom and bust coalition, you know, do Democrats just say, okay, well, that was a road game, 2016's a home game, we're going to win?
Well, I think that would be foolish. I think there is a reality if you look at the exit polls. Americans are really tired of both parties. They don't trust either party. And when it comes to presidential elections, since 1952, each party has only held the White House for two terms, with the exception of Bush Sr., who essentially won a third term of Ronald Reagan. So,
the awful Democrats' campaign by Dukakis.
The truth is that the Democrats are the underdogs going into 2016 in terms of being able to capture the White House from a historical perspective. And while they are more together, and they have sort of many more technological sort of tools at their disposal, I would argue that if they don't learn from this loss, they may be facing another one.
Here's an interesting quote from The Guardian, economist Gary Young, who said, according to a CNN exit poll, 8 in 10 Americans disapprove of how Congress has been handling its job, while almost 6 in 10 are displeased with President Obama. A full 40% have a positive view of Democrats, 40% have a positive view of Republicans. Americans just elected the party they like the least to run the government body they trust the least. Even greater cynicism is the most likely outcome.
Well, again, this really speaks to the fact that both parties' brands have taken huge hits over the last year. And really, so much of this dates back to a year ago, October, when first you saw the Republicans lead a shutdown, and then you saw essentially President Obama and his administration roll out a healthcare website that was filled with problems and questions. So you essentially have had the American people lose trust in the governing ability of both parties. This is why we have record numbers of independents. And it's also why Democrats had such a difficult time trying to turn out their vote yesterday. But I don't think that Democrats should ignore the fact that their margins among Hispanics were down from where they have been over the last couple cycles. They were even down among whites and African Americans. And in fact, they lost the Asian vote last night. So there are certainly some problems for them. Young people did not split anywhere near the way that they split in 2008 or 2012. So the Democrats have work to do.
And
it wasn't only vote split, it was also turnout with all of those groups in particular.
Absolutely. I mean, I think part of the reason why turnout was down, though, among those groups is because there is a great sense of disillusionment. There's that sense that the party didn't address their issues.
Was it down relative to the prior midterm?
Yes.
That is a problem.
So not relative to 2010, but certainly when you look at like 2006 or even 2002.
Right. Although 2006, you had the huge backlash over Iraq, but Laura, who do you see as emerging as winners out of this debacle?
Well, oddly enough, the person who emerges as a winner, which surprised me, is Governor Chris Christie. But that's partly because the one...
Sit down and shut up!
Yeah, no, I mean, the one thing that I anticipated last night, which did not come true, was that the Republicans were essentially overexposed in the governor's races across the country because most of the governors who had won in 2010, they were up for re-election. Democrats should have picked up gubernatorial seats yesterday. In fact, the net, they ended up losing a net of 3. Republicans won in Massachusetts and Maryland at the gubernatorial level. They were not able to knock Rick Scott off in Florida or Scott Walker in Wisconsin. I think those are...
Or even Brownback in Kansas, one of the least popular governors in the country.
Absolutely. I mean, these are, I think, major losses for the Democrats, and Chris Christie, who is chair of the Republican Governors Association, I think ends up looking pretty good.
So one thing I just wanted to interject, You know, earlier in the year, we had we hosted on this show,
and for those of you who recall our Silicon Beach debate that we had earlier in the year, featuring all the candidates for the open seat being vacated by Congressman Waxman, including Ted Lieu and Elon Carr, the two people who were in the runoff. Ted Lieu won the seat, hands down, and so he will be taking the seat. But it's interesting in terms of the tech races. One Senate seat people were looking at was Mark Udall, because he'd been very vocal about NSA reform, and he took a beating. Does that mean anything on that issue, or was it just other issues that were affecting it?
Well, I mean, I think when you look at that overall race, that race ended up really pivoting on and turning around women's issues, and even one of Mark Udall's supporters in the last sort of day of the campaign actually voiced at a rally a desire for Udall to sort of not talk about women's issues anymore and to discuss the other things he supported. That probably would have been a wise choice for him to make, but many of the Democrats at the Senate level did not do those things. In fact, Chris Van Hollen came out today, who essentially is in the House and is their one of the minority whips, and he essentially said, you know, Democrats in the House did focus more on the economy, did focus on more of those kind of bread and butter issues, which include in California, certainly tech jobs and sort of technology policy at the national level, but at the Senate level, we didn't see that.
Yeah, Chris is actually a law school classmate of mine who got elected by beating Maria Shriver's cousin, and Maria Shriver's brother actually lost yesterday here in California, running for LA County Supervisor, Board of Supervisors. Now, who should run in 2016 but probably won't?
Oh, that's a great question.
Because I remember that was it Dale Bumpers that quote about anyone who wants the office should it was automatically disqualified because you got to be crazy to want it.
I got an answer for that one.
Okay,
and she's the senior senator from Massachusetts.
There's a lot of people trying to egg her on to run.
Yep.
You're talking about Elizabeth Warren, I take it.
Yeah, you bet I am. And essentially, it would be a replay of 2008 in that Hillary Clinton could potentially have some problems with Democrats who are a little bit put off by her propensity to have a militaristic notions in foreign policy.
And on that point, have we ever elected a cackler?
Elected a what?
A cackler. You ever heard a laugh?
cackler.
I would say that, Thomas Jefferson actually did not have a very good speaking voice. His voice was very high and squeaky. So,
but his television commercials were great.
Weren't they? I do think that one of the things that I would argue to any Democrat is, quite frankly, they should jump into the race. If for no other reason than that Hillary Clinton is going to, if she becomes the nominee, need to pick a vice presidential running mate. And typically you want someone who has essentially run the gauntlet with you already, because they then know all of your issues, they know your position, they've had some time in the national spotlight, and they don't essentially implode when, the focus kind of turns to them.
And
I think of the Elizabeth Warren thing. I said, if she weren't a woman, she would be odds-on favorite to be the vice presidential selection.
Right.
But I think Hillary Clinton would be reluctant to have an all, the first female presidential nominee to have an all-female ticket. She might just think that that's a bit much.
You know, I also, this is the right analogy, but I think of the Tom Brady, you know, for years was a backup quarterback for the Patriots, and then, you know, their star quarterback gets injured, and he just jumps in and, you know, takes off and, you know, does wonderfully and is a legend. You know, but had Drew Bledsoe not got injured, you know, who knows what would have happened to him. And you know, in a presidential race, you never know what could happen. You see races and people, politicians implode all the time. Who could have predicted Gary Hart would have collapsed? And so, you know, why not get in and, you know, just to get the exposure and stick around for a while and see what happens.
And there's also the other issue that long term, you know, should the Democrats in fact lose 2016 because of sort of the historical patterns, you would want to have a farm team set up for 2020. You know, if Senator, you know, and Secretary of State Clinton manages to basically run with no real primaries and win the nomination, and then she loses a general election, the Democratic bench looks very weak.
And I also think it's to her disadvantage. I thought McCain was hurt by the fact that once you have the race locked up, you get no coverage. Everyone was covering Hillary and Barack. And so that just added to the kind of sexiness, momentum Obama had going into the convention, and then McCain didn't. So we only have about 5 minutes.
We just had a perfect manifestation of that here in the state of Arizona, where the Democratic candidate was able to scare off all of his primary opponents, and the Republicans had a free-for-all nomination fight, and you know, the Republican here won handily, beating even the registration sped, which is already Republican.
Is that for governor?
You have a fight, yes, for governor. You get out there, and unless, I mean, there's always the risk of it getting extremely nasty, and you get hurt by that, but you get the kinks worked out of your system, and you get your name recognition up.
All right, we only have about 5 minutes left. Mike, you first. Tell us about your organization and your quick prediction for 2016.
Our organization, we do opinion research. Most of that work now is done in the legal arena. We do expert testimony work and do surveys for litigation purposes. A lot of them are in employment law, but it also includes trademark and other kinds of things. And I think I gave you the prediction before. 2016 is going to look different. I think that among the other factors, high likelihood that the Republicans overinterpret and overplay their hand and look for war within the Republican ranks for the soul of the Republican Party. Is this a Tea Party, or is this a mainstream kind of business conservative party? They have yet to fight that one out.
Yeah, and I think parties love to cannibalize themselves. That's the awful part about the primary process. Laura, tell us about your wonderful work at George Washington.
Well, in fact, our program is really, I joke that it's the school for political junkies, because really what we do is we give graduate degrees in political management, which essentially amounts to learning all about how to run campaigns and do everything from polling to fundraising to, you know, creating television advertisements and learning about what it means to be a digital director. So we just, in fact, had 5 of our alumni win offices across the country last night, and we had many more alumni spread throughout the ranks of the political world, and it's great to be involved with it. It's fun to sort of be at this nexus of both academic political science and practitioner politics.
Okay, 2016, so prediction.
My 2016, I will tell you that the person I am most interested in watching, only because it would most upset the current political structure, is Rand Paul. And he is really, he is well positioned to do well in Iowa. He's well sort of suited for New Hampshire. And in fact, he's got a great deal of name recognition and support in South Carolina.
So unfortunately, he has a lot of ties to white supremacist groups, which really disturbs me. But So, but we
and
only
yet
have a few
he's
minutes.
Been working with Cory Booker on prison reform.
Well, that sounds good, but you know, there actually have been when Anonymous hacked into some of the documents from Rand Paul and Ron Paul and kind of showed some of the communications with Stormfront and some of the other organizations. But so we have on our blog at cyberlawradio.wordpress.com, we have profiles of both Mike and Lars. Be sure to check them out. It includes links to their websites. And I want to thank you both. It's always been a thrill talking to you. Unfortunately, our team didn't carry the day, but you know, there's always next year, it sounds like. But hope you'll come back again, and I want to thank you. It's been a great show. Stay tuned. We'll be having a number of interviews with leading authors courtesy of the Miami Book Fair, so hope you'll be listening to us and as throughout November as we talk to some of these really interesting authors. So I want to thank everyone. Hope you voted, and definitely stay tuned. We have an interesting 2 years ahead. This is Bennett Kelly with the Cyber Law and Business Report, broadcasting live from the Internet Law Center and here in the heart of Silicon Beach. Check us out at theinternetlawcenter.net, and until then, court is adjourned. We will see you next week back here. Be safe.
This has been a presentation of WebmasterRadio.fm, the world's largest business-to-business radio and podcast network. We welcome you to sample past episodes of this program, as well as our complete library of programs, on demand or on the air via our 24/7 live audio stream at www.webmasterradio.fm. The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm.